There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Hi, and welcome to the Yes Live Show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, helping people to find out what they can do to help themselves through cancer and cancer treatment. My guest today is a veteran of the show, indeed a veteran of integrative cancer care. Patricia Pete founded Cancer Options some years before Yes to Life arrived on the scene, and was one of the very first reliable sources for information about integrating lifestyle and complementary approaches alongside conventional care. Patricia has taken the Cancer Options service from strength to strength and now recently initiated the Pete Institute to train others in integrative cancer support.
Hi Patricia, great to have you back on the show again.
Robin, always a pleasure. Feel like two dinosaurs from the past, aren't we? We're lumbering on slowly together.
Not so slow, come on. It's actually been more than a year since your last one, would you believe?
It doesn't feel like five minutes. Yeah, all good.
Well, that is the problem with advancing years, and of course the years pass by ever faster. So the main aim of the chat today, to catch up on developments of cancer options on the Pete Institute and to look forward to what's in the pipeline for the rest of the year and onward. But first, I'd like to take a few minutes to go right back to the dawning of cancer options, which must have been more than two decades ago now.
Robin, you killing it.
Can you take
in
us...
In a land long, long ago.
Yeah, it was. Can you take us right back to the thoughts and experiences that led you to set up Cancer Options in the first place?
Yeah, oh my word. Gosh, it is a long time ago. And essentially, it was, so there I was, running chemotherapy clinics, dispensing, looking after people, specialising in lymphomas and GIs, so pancreatics, esophagus, all the difficult GI stuff. A gradual realization that, gosh, it wasn't achieving a great deal a lot of the time. And the thing I refer to most is I couldn't answer anybody's questions. I was being, I'm a very inquisitive person. I was being asked, how do I stop losing weight? How do I get energy back? How do I deal with these side effects? What we did was so limited in that. I was looking at that, and then I think I mentioned to you before, I had some clients who were integrating, doing IVBC, doing diets, etc. And one lady in particular, Gillian, who remains fond in my memory, even, we're going back about 30, 35 years now.
Really? Right,
and,
okay.
She was just a phenomena. She did so well against the cancer. She was knocking it out of the park. She was full of energy. She used to boom through the oncology doors, and she's in better nick than I was. And I thought, well, we're not the clever ones. So I got talking to her, got used to what she was doing and other people as well. And I just thought, well, really, are we the most intelligent people here? And I actually was very excited about what I was finding, what was going on. I thought everyone's going to be interested in the medical world.
Right.
And I was going home to my dear husband, Mike, who's always been amazing, and say to him, I get very frustrated and saying, there's so much that people can do to help support themselves, to feel better, to get better, but nobody talks about it. We're not allowed to. I said, somebody needs to set up a consultancy or something so that people get to know what their options are.
Right. I wonder who.
Yeah, and he did utter the immortal words, somebody, why not you?
Right.
And then this was coupled up with Gillian, who, I kind of started discussing with her. And then every time I saw her, she was like, have you done it yet? Why not? Why is it not happening? I go, it became easier to do it than not to do it.
Right.
But it was a weird thing to be quiet. I look back now and you think, was that mad? Because now I look back and think, it does look slightly bonkers, doesn't it, to leave a job and a pension and security and all that. And it was an absolute vacuum at the time. I think you emerged a few years later into a very good company. Yeah. Thank you for that. But there wasn't, you know, there wasn't a lot going on.
There wasn't.
And I used to, at one point, when I first started, obviously, I had to sort of keep some money coming in to the family home. And I used to actually go to work at nights on the medical, I was working in an agency. I used to go to work at nights on medical emergencies. Mm-hmm. And I'd go to bed in the morning with the phone and a pad and a pen. So if anybody rang, I would suddenly jerk myself awake and sometimes I'd brighten jet. Hello, cancer options. You know, cancer options. Yeah, it was as bad as that.
Yeah.
But that's what it took.
Good.
And gradually started, very slowly, you know, so I was juggling everything, but all the time learning. And it astonishes me how much I learned, but the fact that I'm still learning at the same rate now.
The ballpark is moving, isn't it? Very fast.
Oh, my word.
But it's a good sign, God, isn't it? It's a great sign that actually we're understanding much more.
It's fantastic.
As things go on. The pace has gone up significantly.
Well, the pace has gone up. The knowledge, the ability to research, to get that precise information about what's happening to individual people and to metabolics is phenomenal. To work very precisely with people now.
Really?
So, you know, I must say in the older days, it was more generalized, but now we can be, you know, not, I often say a lot of the time people, one of the big issues is people come into integrative medicine and doing a lot of things for fear of missing out on something rather than really knowing what is going on. So, you know, our job is to preside that precision and, you know, that's improved. The results have improved enormously. The knowledge and the you know, I often say, my clients, you will know far more about yourself and your cancer than your oncologist ever will. And that's true. They become their own experts. Yeah. So, you know, so the whole area has now, you know, and you look at what's going on around the world and integration. I've got one of my one of my students is launching integrative oncology in China.
Yes.
And has got some doctors on board and she's taking everything that I'm teaching her and launching it in China and America, you know. And everywhere it's so exciting. It's less exciting in the UK because, you know, they need to get going. But it's quite remarkable when we look back.
Yeah, well, I was certainly with you on the fact there wasn't much around in those days. It didn't take me long to find you. I remember you were about all that was happening. We met up at a conference very early on, I remember.
We did. But, when we were young and full of fun.
Foolish. Anyway, so I wonder if you tell us a little bit about the climate, really, for integration back then. To be fair, integration wasn't really even a term in use then, was it?
It really wasn't. It was still, you know, still classified alternative, very much. And to be fair, there had been a fair few wacky things around. There had been a fair few wacky things around.
Inevitably,
and because of lack of research and lack of good information, people were very susceptible to that. And you'd often come across people doing something, and you think, oh, really?
Right.
I don't think that's quite the good idea. And from that, there was, an area of trying to protect their patients, a lot of oncologists were very anti-anything. You know, in terms of, you know, you're either going to, at least you're going to do is waste your money. B, you might do yourself some harm. So there was a lot of negativity about it, and that was generalized across the board and to some extent justified. What wasn't recognized was that what was emerging was a whole process of understanding of metabolics that would come to what we have today, which is, a science-based force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely right.
Still is not recognized yet
for
what it should be, which is absolutely essential, actually.
I'm glad you used the word metabolics there, because you're right in as much as there's an almost consistent thread of people who've sort of stayed outside the box, if you like, right the way from Otto Warburg through, and have been treating people metabolically for cancer, whatever other people called them. because it helped. And, you know, yes, you're right, it was all a lot more haphazard, but some things, to be fair, high-dose vitamin C, since day one, has been doing a job for people with cancer, and it's still doing it now, and it's taken a horrendous slanging along the way. But, you know, it's an incredibly useful approach that's still in use more than ever now than it was.
Yes, and now the research is very much emerging. It has been slow on that, slower than others. But, and I think what's been recognised is, I would say years ago, okay, so when, in my early days, I would probably have to some degree, explain and sell the idea of why you would integrate both yes. approaches or whatever, why it was a good idea. Nowadays, I don't have to at all. Or very little. People come along fully loaded. They've got it that standard of care is one-dimensional. They've got it that there are a lot of negatives to it, that it's having a detrimental effect on the immune system, on the gut, on everything else. And they've got it that they're not going to get that information very much from the medical world. So, you know, they have to run their own show in that respect. And people are coming along, you know, sort of saying, okay, we understand the situation. We understand. And, you know, we are embracing this and we are empowering ourselves and we are, you know, we are doing it. And certainly since the emerging research on repurposed drugs as well, it's really just, and learning all about the cancers, you know, Jay McLennan's amazing work on learning all about the signaling pathways and the metabolic pathways. It's emerged as a rightful contender, you know, to standard of care, either alongside or as a replacement, you know, as a choice for the individual.
Yeah, things have moved on enormously. Yeah, so you know, I think when you started up and when I arrived as well, it was what was going on was less like integration and more like trench warfare, but.
Yes, it was. We were not popular, yeah. Were we?
No. But anyway, it has moved on, but far too slowly, and it definitely is moving now. So anyway, but probably the single thing that set your approach apart from the majority of anything else that was happening at that time was that you were actually a renegade from orthodox medicine.
Yes.
With long experience on the oncology boards, and therefore you got a broad appreciation for what actually was working within conventional medicine and what wasn't. So it's very different to attacking every single aspect, which was a common tactic on in the trenches on both sides, of course. You know, the other side are going to kill you, basically. And that hasn't entirely been left behind even now. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what it was like back then working within this environment and what you sought to achieve for your clients.
It was hostile. No doubts about it. What used to frustrate me was the hostility didn't come from a place of knowledge. They didn't know what I was doing, what I was saying. You know, I've studied cancer now every day for 35 years, whatever. You know, I've got great understanding of cancer. And for me, it's very important that people understand how cancer behaves so that they understand that. And the trench warfare that we had then came from a place of ignorance, really, particularly about nutrition. So it was fear based that if you go and get some nutrition advice from the other side, they will tell you to starve yourself to death. Essentially, you know, they'll take we're telling you that you should be nurturing yourself with donuts and Mars bars and ice creams. They will tell you to eat nothing. To starve cancer out of the body, which is not true. It's not what we were doing. We actually understood, you know, the metabolics. We understood cachexia. We understood how to do these things in a proper way that enable people not to feed the cancer. And now we understand that even better.
Right.
But it was very hostile. We used to get a lot of negativity, but nothing ever direct. Nobody ever spoke to me. Nobody ever rang me up and asked me what I was doing, what I thought. Nobody wrote to me. There was just, you know, you get comments passed on all the time. I did have a habit at one point in my early days, actually. When I first got into this, I thought, wow, the medical profession is going to be so excited when they hear about this.
Right. They were excited, but not the way you thought.
how naive was I? God. No, I did. I was like, hey, look, everybody. This is like, and I go, hello, everybody. Everybody. So I used to write to the Marsden every year and say to them, this is really interesting. A lot of it, you know, there's emerging research. It's more research-based and that the people are benefiting. Would you like me to come and do a talk for you? And then they'd ignore me. And then I wrote every year for about 5 years and then I gave up kind of thing. So, but as I say, it was fear and ignorance that they were basing, you know, I still get it less and less and less now, but I still get it to some degree where they make a broad comment like oxygen will cause cancer to spread. Okay, can you give me your rationale and research on that, please? No, but it will. And you shouldn't look after the gut. You shouldn't have probiotics. Well, can we look at the individual reasons why and why not for and what situations? No, shouldn't have. You know, so giving a broad base, you shouldn't. Not from a place of metabolic research and evidence base is not terribly clever. And even today, you know, without wishing to be disparaging, I don't often come across clients who've received dietetic advice from the orthodox side that have actually found it helpful and makes sense and fits with their holistic view of how they want to deal with cancer.
Mm-hmm. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
But it would also be fair to say that, of course, that kind of blanket hostility exists on both sides at that time, didn't it? I mean, you had the...
It did, yes. Let's be fair. It was
poison, that kind of language, yeah. You know, used to come... don't go in there, it's just like certain death,
yeah.
Basically.
Absolutely right, you know. And it used to frustrate me because I said, do you actually understand that I sometimes I'm encouraging people to have chemotherapy when they don't want it?
Yes.
Because I think it's a good thing. Certainly the whole rationale for hormone therapy we go into, you know, cut out the hysteria that's out there, you know, and talk to people about where the noise comes from. And, you know, people who have issues with treatments are the ones who'll go on the internet and talk about it. People who are fine won't. So I was giving a very balanced viewpoint to the whole thing,
right?
And helping people come to format their protocols in the way that's, you know, that absolutely suits them. But it was coming from both sides, and both was a slightly hysterical reaction.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do we want for anybody with cancer, Robin? We want them to get the absolute best out of everything.
Absolutely right.
Make the best decisions, make safe decisions, and get the best results. So I don't care what people do. You know, as long as it's kind of the best decision that they have available.
Yeah. Well, I can personally thank you for helping me to gain more appreciation for things like chemotherapy and what they can offer and under what circumstances.
Oh, yes, I had to convert you, didn't I?
You know, I was feeling quite negative myself about those kind of things when I started out. But, you know, it's good to have a broader understanding that they have their place, and they certainly do. So
it's easy to do so, and I think there are still situations where, yes, it's a very poor argument for it, you know. Depending on, but it, you know, you can't generalise. That's my point. You know,
that's right.
You can't generalise. That's too dangerous.
Mm. So you know, one of the most important realizations that I had around the early days of Yes to Life was that integrated medicine asks the same basic question about all possible approaches as any person with cancer who's looking to improve and lengthen their life would be, which is, well, could this help me? That's the intelligent question to ask about anything that's presented to you. And, you know, the biggest problem, if you like, with the trench warfare, there's no one actually standing alongside the person with cancer who's asking that question. The poor old person with cancer, they're stumbling around in the no man's land between the warring factions, getting hit in both directions, and both sides primarily preoccupied with having God and right on their side and defending themselves. And most importantly, they're preoccupied with winning the war.
Yeah, I mean, you'd often get somebody with cancer who's going in dreading that conversation with their oncologist and their oncology team, and perhaps getting different vibes from their own families. You know, and sort of go, you know, instinctively, I want to do more and wider, but they're getting pushed from all sides. And I said to Carol, who works for me recently, she's learning the area, and I said one thing that is that people get from here is they have conversations they can't have anywhere else. You know, to get that, you get my opinion, you get my approach, you know, you get my point of view. And that's what's so important with that. You know, as I teach my students, it's as much psychology as it is the metabolics.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, people who ring up the Yes Life Helpline are often got the first listening voice who's not being judgmental about anything they're saying about themselves or the treatment, and just listening in order to look to support them. Is enormously empowering and important in some cases.
It really is, and we're just setting up at the moment. We're having to set up a group of our clients very happily. It's a bizarre thing, isn't it? Because we've got a lot of people. I've just noticed over the last sort of 18 months, so many people are perhaps going into remission and doing well, where they perhaps have been told that they weren't going to, or it was unexpected, and that's a weird place to be. You think, well, isn't everybody happy? But no, because, you know, it's such a lot to deal with, and people, even though everyone's like, oh, you know, fantastic, kind of, you know, you're in remission, they've still got all that uncertainty to deal with, plans to make, you know, psychologically there's a lot, and they're
very
still kind
tough.
Of like, there's nobody else, they don't, you know, and the Orthodox side, when they go talk to them, they'll still be really quite negative, and it's such a weird place. So
it's good. Well, you can offer the kind of support of good, solid information to support them in the position they're in. And that has a psychological effect in itself, having a kind of rational approach, if you like, to staying well, rather than keeping your fingers crossed. And,
And to be able to provide the evidence to support
it.
You know, it's very, you know, we're all very evidence-based practice.
Yeah, well, that's very good. That's fantastic for people as well. And I think the other great thing that's out there for people more and more these days, and I can point to our own Wigwam groups, which are great for this, is actually
brilliant.
Connecting to other people in similar circumstances so you can actually support each other. I think that's magic. I think it's such a great thing.
It's absolutely, it's, you know, we look internationally at what's happening, Robin, and it is a movement now. It's a movement that's gathering in power. It's a movement that's gathering in numbers and research, and it's a movement that's gathering in energy and everything, you know, and that's just a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
That it's a viable community of people all moving together, learning together, you know, amazing. You look at the amount of conferences and everything that's going on now, that there never used to be anything.
That's right.
You know, now it's going on all the time, which is fantastic.
It's really good. So with true integration, you could call that an agnostic approach, is because it's beyond any particular set of dogmatic beliefs. At last, there's a focus there on what's actually working for people, and also a focus on them and their particular needs and desires for themselves. So
putting them at the centre. It's not putting cancer at the centre. Yeah. When I was in oncology, we just focused on the tumour. We talked about the tumour. That's it. You know, and you're like, oh, look, it's attached to somebody. How wonderful, you know. So, they are the most important thing.
So, you know, this is, if you like, this is the very heart of what it means to give patient-centered care.
Totally.
It's actually a listening.
And it's what people want.
Absolutely. Well, it's what anybody wants, isn't it? They don't want to be ignored and treated like a tumour. I mean, you know, it's absolutely obvious. So there you were. So you were actually integrating before integrating was a thing. They hadn't been used that word. I don't know when it came in exactly, but it seems like it was about 2007, 2008, 2009, somewhere around there.
We didn't have a word, did we?
Not really. It was, like, called, you know.
There were no words for us.
Not for proper integration. There weren't.
No.
So anyway, I just interested in you tell us what you remember about the development of integration in cancer care, you know, how it began to happen, how it, you know, how it began to be accepted.
I think it's been a kind of movement forward. Two things, really. The amount of people who, like myself, who are curious and looking at research, and then the ability from the both the scientific research and the metabolic testing to be able to analyze and know what we're talking about and know what you're looking at. That's what's driven change.
Yeah, it is a big
change.
That's
what's really driven change, yeah. And things like functional testing, where there's one thing, there's functional testing, so, you know, there's a lot of things you can find out exactly what's underlying things and what's happening to that. And then the ability to do genetic analysis from the orthodox side, you know, map the whole genome and see what's happening. So you match up what's happening. But you build a picture of the person with as much information as possible, and then you match the orthodox approaches to the integrative approaches to, you know, it becomes a game of chess, you know, what to choose when. But it's sort of all done from a, you know, finding out if someone's got EGFR mutations, you know, they might be offered a drug. But, you know, we can also look at repurposed drugs and supplements that also work on that.
Mm.
And because of metabolic flexibility, that cancer will change and mutate and go down a different pathway. And you block it, you know, as Joe McClellan pioneered, you know, you block all the different ways. So you come at cancer from many, many different ways.
Yeah.
Because the big issue, the big Achilles heel of the orthodox standard of care approach has always been metabolic flexibility. And this is what, you know, my conference is about in September. I themed it on that because I think a lot of people kind of know cancer changes, and but they don't really understand what's happening. And science is now telling us really what is happening there. That's what we need to target.
Mm.
So, you know, everyone knows that people, you know, are given chemotherapy and then it comes back and so that stopped working. So what does that mean? What's happening when it stopped working? That's metabolic flexibility.
Yeah.
That means cancer has changed and it's switched its fuel sources and it's doing different things. So, and then, it, you know, they give them another one and then another type of chemotherapy and then it changes again. But at that time, you're getting an increased lipid issue in the body, the gut's getting wrecked, the immune system's dropping. So, you know, you're getting diminishing responses, you're getting diminishing returns on investing your health in that.
Yeah.
And everything about integration is kind of balancing that out. That's what we aim to do. We aim to influence what happens with treatments, and we aim to, you know, ensure that if they're on treatments, they, you know, keep going. Treatments don't stop working, or, you know, there is, you know, if they're deciding not to use treatments, they have a viable option afterwards.
Interesting. Yeah, it often strikes me as rather interesting how the language of genetics has sort of provided a bridge. In as much as that, you know, you could say the whole alternative world came from a metabolic perspective, as I said. There have been people doing metabolic treatments for cancer as long as I know. But the whole of orthodox medicine has been talking genetics all the time. So, you know, from the way the evidence has gone, genetics doesn't seem to have won the day as what cancer's really all about. But there's a mass of genetic information now, which is useful, and particularly when it comes to dealing with the energy pathways and things. There's lots of useful information there.
Yeah, and I think as well, I find that the way genetics are talked about by the medical profession is doesn't describe it well, because a lot is people think genetics are fixed. Is often that, you know, people still say, oh, I've got the BRCA gene. We've all, you know, and also, well, we've all got the BRCA gene. It's a mismatch repair gene. It protects us against cancer. When it's doing that, it's balanced. When you are told you have the BRCA gene, it means it's overexpressing. And we know that a lot of things can influence genetic expression on the complementary side. On the integrative side, that we can, you know, we can promote the upgrade the expression of genetics that have switched on and switched off, you know, like P53 for an example, which is, you know, your first line defense. So people kind of think of genes that, you know, you've got a gene, but actually the proper way to understand genetics is balance and switching on, switching off. You can be HER2 positive with breast cancer. You can become HER2 negative. You know, that's only something that's been understood the last 10 years. You know, but I don't think that comes across well. That is real power for people. Because that then brings in, and I know you've got your great conference in October on this, that then brings in all the things that promote good genetics, not just the metabolics, but, you know, meditation and massage and all those things. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's so much there.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah. Anyway, I was very much struck by the kind of the way that I've heard recently of people going in to see their oncologist with something that they want to do, and they've produced the reason why genetically it's a good thing for them to do. And this has made much more impression than these things normally do, that, you know, they've actually had a positive response from their oncologist because they can see, oh, yeah, there's the evidence. It's going to positively influence this genetic situation, which is a problem. And, you know, that I just very struck how it's sort of provided a common language which is respected by both sides. And
yes. Yeah, we've found a middle ground of conversation, haven't we?
It is. And, of course, that's what I'm looking for all the time. You are too. You know, we want to find this middle ground because integration requires the end of hostilities, because everybody's got to communicate, they've got to collaborate for the sake of the patient. So, you know, that's the essence of what good medicine, that's what we're looking for.
Patient-centered care. The ideal scenario is that team approach. It's not about who's in charge, who's got egos. Everybody has a contribution. I sent a client to her oncologist recently. She's got hormonal breast cancer, and we looked at all the hormonal methylation pathways. And her oncologist, he says, "Oh, that's interesting. I haven't looked at methylation pathway since I was in medical school," which is kind of,
worrying.
Worrying. But the level of interest, the more we can't get doctors to change their minds unless we can put evidence in front of them, unless we can put research in front of them. You know, one of the people we've got talking at our conference, Professor Walter Longo, is very much doing studies, and that's what's got to go. The big question, we've got to move that back one bit, and there's two issues with that as we move things forward, Robin. Most definitely, as I've always said, we have to measure the method, not just minimalistically take out one element and sort of say, how does that perform against cancer? Because it's not about one thing, it's about many things. So we've got to do that, and then you've got to ask the other question, where's the research money going to come from? You know, Professor Dalgleish is doing a research into low-dose naltrexone. He's having to raise $60 million because that's your entry point.
$60 million.
60. That's the point at which you're going to impress somebody.
Yeah.
He's an amazing man. He'll do it. But, you know, in terms of if it comes to, okay, we need the studies, we need to be able to put a massive amount of, research in front of people, you've got to look at the amount of money that's going into cancer research.
Yeah.
Where is it, you know, can we have some of that, please?
Yeah, it's got to be done. I agree. Yeah. And I think, I'm hearing examples of where that's happening, where money is being channeled into something which is right in our territory. It isn't being channeled in there because it has the prospects of vast returns and all this kind of thing. Well, it's actually because it looks like sound science and it's worth supporting. So I think that's great. And I think the more it happens, the more it will happen. So I'm hoping that divert will get in firmly in place and a nice flow of cash will start going in the right direction.
Yeah, and the other big thing that we need, which is my big passion, is we need practitioners working with people with cancer. You know, it's very much a thing in the UK that nutritionists, naturopaths, etc., when they train, they're told don't get work with people with cancer,
because you might
get it wrong, you might make a mistake. And you know, I set up the Peak Foundation to teach and support practitioners, because it is a labyrinth. It's a lot of information. When someone's diagnosed and their mind is blown away by what they're dealing with, to then research and look into integrative things and sort themselves out is a very big ask. So we need someone to sit with them and interpret and do all that. And, you know, so I'm very much encouraging, you know, sort of positivity and confidence in working with people with cancer. It can be done in a very safe, systematic way that's enormously helpful. And my new project, because I just needed another one.
Yeah, of course.
I was doing nothing after lunch. but no, this is one of the things that I'm hoping is going to form change. Is one of the big issues as well is we keep going, oh, there's lots of evidence. You know, I've been collecting research studies for, you know, 30 years. There's lots of evidence. Yeah, where is it? Well, generally, it's all over the place. It's here, it's there. You know, Jane Michelin brought together a fantastic amount.
Yes.
But, you know, when practitioners want to work safely and the public want to work safely, they want to go to a source of information that sort of says, yep, okay, this is the information you need. So, you know, I'm working with a company and we are getting, you know, basically they're building a massive database, very, very high tech, that's going to check interactions, that's going to bring research, you know, so that people can sort of say, okay, you know, Jeff has got prostate cancer, you know, he's got a P10 deletion, so that means his colon switched on.
Amazing.
Metabolism, yeah. And he's got this going off and that going off. You know,
that
what
is
are
going
the
to be
right
great.
Approaches, what are the pathways, etc. This is all going to get churned out. Okay, these are all the right things. This is what you kind of need to focus on.
Yeah,
which is going to be great. When it started, that's a biggie, God.
So, look, you mentioned in passing there the matter of the Peat Institute, which is, of course, the next thing I wanted to talk about. So, come on, what, why, when, where? Let's have all the lowdown.
Your fault.
Well, you tell me that.
Your fault.
I don't mind taking the credit.
I did. I am saying it again. Robin Daly kept saying, there's only one of you.
Right. Cloning. It's cloning.
We need more. Yeah, and I'm sure you were thinking at the back of your head, oh, if she drops dead next week, well, that's it, then it's all gone away.
I did think that, yes, you're right.
Yeah, no, you did. I know, you were there. So, yeah, that was it. And, you know, I would at some time like to retire. And, but, yeah, it would be an enormous shame if, you know, I had no format. It was all in my head and in my computer. I had no formatted way of that. So that's essentially that of really to... You know, to get people involved, to move things forward, do it in a very supportive way. You know, we have our courses, but we also do mentorship meetings, and I do one-to-ones. So, you know, I'll talk to somebody before they speak to a client. I'll talk to them afterwards, so they've got the reassurance of knowing that they're getting the oncology side, because you know I find cancer absolutely fascinating, but you know, it is a lot to learn. So we're providing them with that professional backup. So say, yeah, this is pancreatic cancer. This is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen with the pancreatic enzymes and the bile. And these are the potential problems they're going to face. So we've got strategies for everything. So, yeah, so that's the Peat Institute. And, yeah, it's great. And it's another lovely community. It really is. Our students are fantastic. We all learn from each other. I'm getting next week's ready, and it's a client I've got who's with an aggressive brain tumor. Not that they're not very often unaggressive, but we are now getting on for about 3 years on with no recurrence, which is great. And marvelous. A couple of things have come up on tests. Yeah, I know. I love it. A couple of things come up on tests that I kind of said, that's not really. I don't think that's to do with cancer. I'm taking it to my students. So can you sort this out for me? You get injections and orange from everywhere,
yeah,
which is fantastic. Yeah. So it's enormous fun, actually.
Okay, so you better tell us a bit about what's involved and what the entry requirements are.
The entry requirements are essentially to have a background in nutrition, naturopathy, to have some training in functional medicine
right.
to a degree. just to have that baseline, etc., of understanding nutrition and metabolics to a degree. And then we have our foundation course, we have our specialist courses that I'm constantly enlarging on, and we bring all that in. Then every month we cover a different cancer subject, and we've got a whole library of things that we've covered over the last 2 years available on video for people. So they contact the Peak Foundation, they can do the foundation course, because you know you've got to have an understanding of cancer and how it metabolizes, etc. And it's done at your own pace. I don't want to. Practitioners are very busy. You know, I like people to. People will gather interest once they start to get into cancer and working with cancer. It's like, oh, that's so interesting, and this is interesting. You know, so we kind of drag them in and take them along and watch their interest grow. And it's wonderful watching their confidence, actually. You know, because they come from a, I don't want to get anything wrong. So.
Yeah. Well, it is nice to get them feeling they're well enough informed to actually confidently be able to work.
Brilliant.
In that way. So so it's online, it's at your own pace. But so that's true also the foundation course, you can do that over.
Yeah, what? Absolutely. Yeah, all that is. And then we have our live sessions every month. And that's,
So they're in addition to the.
They're in addition to that. So there's continual support and mentorship. It's a bit like our clients. We're continually working with our clients. People always need to be supported. And then we have the exciting things like our conference coming up in September.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant.
Okay, well, all right. Let's hear about that then. Come on then.
Conference in September, international conference. I've been working on this for a couple of years now, and it's going to be in person in London, and it's also going to be available online around the world.
Okay.
And it is entitled Metabolic Flexibility, Integrative Oncology in Action, because I wanted to theme it around this, because everything we do, it comes down to two things with cancer, doesn't it? It comes down to the environment of the body being favorable to deal with cancer, either during treatment or after treatment, so making sure that's supported. And it comes down to not allowing cancer to metabolic flexibly go down different pathways. So that's what everybody's working at. But as I said, people don't really understand metabolic flexibility a lot. But, you know, the more... So we are literally theming this throughout. So the more that you understand metabolic flexibility, the more you understand what the aims and objectives are of what you're doing. So Nasha Winters is speaking, of course.
Fantastic.
Yeah, author of The Metabolic Approach to Cancer, The Terrain.
Yeah.
I talk about the body's environment. She's all about the terrain.
She is.
And, you know, she talks about how people are metabolically inflexible, but cancer is, this is my thing, cancer's metabolically inflexible, become more. We've got, speaking in person, we've got Nasha, we've got my good self. We've got Dr. Thomas Girard, who's... works at the Siegfried Clinic, so the founder of metabolic therapies, covering ketogenic diet, bioenergetic metabolism. He's published a lot of peer-reviewed papers.
Yes.
And we have Dr. Abdul Slocum from Chemothermia Clinic, which is literally, integrative oncology in action. So, you know, their oncology clinic, they've literally put this into action to tackle metabolic flexibility to get cancer to respond.
You actually worked with chemothermia. It must be for something like 6 or 7 years now. Is that right?
Well, I don't sort of work with anybody. I'm independent, but
ongoing dialogue been referring people there. And so you've got experience with them, let's say, for 6 or 7 years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he mirrors what we are trying to achieve in terms of working alongside. You know, they will take a resistant person who's built up a lot of resistance and turn it around. And that's the important thing. Is no matter, one thing is what you throw at cancer, but the other, getting it to work. That's the theme of the whole conference, getting it to work. And then I've got some amazing speakers. And we are running alongside this and available to anybody who, you can come online, you can come in person. we've got a whole series of interviews that I'm doing with other specialists around the world. So we've broadened out immensely. So, you know, we've got Mark Linton, who you know very well.
I do know him very well.
You do, author of The Cancer Resolution, yep. which is an amazing book, a new piece of research, which is actually getting to that. What is the feedback loop? Metabolic flexibility. What is protecting cancer cells and what is allowing them to survive and then come back again? Which is what everything's aimed at. His work is amazing. And it's bang on in keeping with what I'm seeing in clinical trials around the world, which I haven't got time to go into. We've got Professor Sarpa Dila from the Obertill Institute in America, who the Obertill Institute, if you remember Nicholas Gonzalez, the Gonzalez Protocol many years ago, that was around one of my first, when I first got going. He sadly died some years ago, but that is now resurged as a metabolic treatment. Jay McClelland, of course, who everybody knows or should know, etc. Professor Carol Sikora, who's an oncologist, who's written a new book, The Key to Getting the Best Cancer Care, Making the System Work for You, from an oncologist, no less.
Good for him.
Good for him.
No, I think he has a genuine interest in patients' well-being, and he takes a very intelligent and reasoned approach.
He does. He's very, very, he's always been very supportive. He's an old friend of mine. Love him to bits. He once said at a conference in London, my hardest clients are the ones that Patricia Pete sends me, because she doesn't want me to do anything to them apart from scan them, which is true. So I love him. We've got Dominic Kemp, who's co-author of The Ketogenic Kitchen, but is a client of mine. She's a breast cancer survivor. She, we're looking from her perspective that she got diagnosed with cancer, suddenly when nutrition is so important. We've got professors. There's so much here in this conference. Professor Serge Geranis, who is an award-winning professor from Portugal, who really focus on, does amazing research and work on P53 and cell immortality. So what is keeping cells going? Prof. Baltolengo, I mentioned.
Huge.
Nutrition.
Huge, yeah.
Fasting mimicking diet, et cetera. Dr. Elizabeth Thompson, CEO, for the National Centre for Integrative Medicine. He's one of the driving forces for integrative approaches in the UK and around the world. They are all doing about 40, 45-minute interviews that are there for people to watch at their leisure. Every one of those has got an amazing contribution to make in terms of people's understanding of cancer and the different things that they can do against it. So the whole aim is that with our conference is that people will come away with a vast amount of knowledge. And it's open to the public. It's open to practitioners. I'm very keen that, I think we haven't got enough practitioners working with cancer, so I don't want information to stop with practitioners. I want the public to be able to access because they become their own experts. And it's hopefully just going to be the most amazing, amazing conference and amazing day.
It certainly sounds like it. And, it's something to go to. Are you able to book yet? And if so, where?
Yeah, you are. Website Integrative Action. We're really going to tell the story of integrative oncology. We're going to tell the whole story of metabolics and cancer, and how it's developed. And I'm going to provide so many research studies and references that are going to be there for people. So, I'm hoping that people come away informed and empowered and really, really realize the value of what they can do for themselves.
Certainly sounds like it. Okay, any quick pointers for where you see things going in the next few years for the Pete Institute?
I see, I can mention that you've brilliantly instigated setting up some scientific boards where experts. I think what's happening, the movement's going to get bigger, Robin. We are starting to congregate, thanks to your good work and other people's, whereby the kind of the main leaders in integrative oncology are coming together to bring information together, to research, to evaluate ourselves, because one of my things is always that I'm evaluating for people, is that does that make sense? Is it safe? You know, is it clinically reasonable to do? And we're going to bring all that stuff under one roof to some extent, so that, you know, we're going to continue to move further and further away from any kind of protocols or strategies that are really not coming from a good science place, that are really not a sensible thing for people to do. And we're going to continue to move to positive, safe action that is actually making an incredible difference against cancer.
Great. All right. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for inviting me, Robin, as always.
It's, it's so good to talk about this onward march of integration. You and me, it'll probably always be too slow, but yeah. I think there's little doubt that it's going in the right direction now, and it is actually moving at last.
It absolutely is. Momentum is picking up enormously. We need to get that information to the public, and we need the public. They're the ones who will bring about change.
Yeah, absolutely.
Always.
Right.
They really will talk to their oncologists and sort of say, look, I'm doing really well. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Cheers, Robin.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your show.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. If you're interested to know more about the conference Patricia was introducing on the 23rd of September, Metabolic Flexibility, Integrative Oncology in Action, then go to nutritioncollective.co.uk, where you can read more about the event and book tickets. Mark Linton's book, The Cancer Resolution, is published by Amazon, and if you've not come across his work before, I definitely recommend you look into it. Mark has also been my guest in a series of interviews for the Yes to Life show, so look out for him on the radio show page of yestolife.org.uk, where you can search for him by name. Mark Linton. There's another opportunity to hear Patricia speak and to meet her at the Yes to Life annual conference on the 7th of October in Euston, London. She will be one of the many experts giving talks and leading workshops at the event, which is a companion to our hugely popular online summer conference that many of you may have attended last month. They jointly go under the title of You and Your Cancer Team, and you can look at the full schedule and the lineup of speakers, as well as book places, on the conference website, which is yestolifeannualconference.org. Thanks very much for listening to the show today. I shall be back again next week with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.